And welcome back to ROJS Radio Live. Again, with your hosts, Monica R.W. and Autumn S. And so what we're about to get ready to do is that we're about to get ready to welcome Anne-Marie McElwain. And she is from Career Fuel. And she's going to be talking about, again, the second half of our Finding Your Passion in the 21st Century series. And I think it's so important because, again, just as we were talking about before we have went off of a commercial break, the job numbers are creeping back up. You know, I mean, unfortunately, this is sad because the job numbers are creeping back up. Only 69,000 jobs were created in April. And the unemployment rate also creeped back up, Autumn, from 8.1 to 8.2%. So now we have to start thinking, you know, with the extended unemployment rationales ending, they're ending because, you know, it's going from 99 weeks down to 79 weeks down to 56 weeks in some states, and even in Michigan, down to 20 weeks. You know, what are people going to do in order to create their next opportunity? So, you know, I think this is critically important that we have Anne-Marie on the show to talk about maybe the opportunity that you should be creating is an entrepreneurial opportunity.
Absolutely.
So let's go ahead and get ready to welcome Anne-Marie onto the show. And before we do that, I want to make sure that I give her bio. Anne-Marie is a former marketing executive with Procter & Gamble and Johnson & Johnson and a consultant to several Fortune 100 companies. Today, as the founder and CEO of CareerFuel.net, she is a social entrepreneur who connects people with the information and inspiration they need to get jobs and start businesses. So let's welcome Anne-Marie onto our show. How are you doing, Anne-Marie?
I'm great, suffering a little bit from allergies, of which a lot of people are right now, but otherwise doing quite well.
Yeah, you know, I mean, the weather has been all over the place, at least here in Michigan. I know, and Autumn can probably attest.
Yesterday,
we were at 50 degrees, and today it looked like we're going to be 80.
Oh, well, lucky you. but we have great fauna happening here, and that's a beautiful thing, but unfortunately it means that some of us suffer as a result.
Yeah, definitely. Well, thank you for taking your Sunday again and coming on to the show to talk about, again, our second half of Finding Your Passion in the 21st Century series. And really, the point of this series is to kind of look beyond basically just on this part of the series, look beyond just basically maybe just finding a job and maybe creating an opportunity for individuals that are looking to return themselves into the workforce. So I just want to make sure I say thank you so much for coming back on again.
You're entirely welcome.
Thank you. So let's start talking about this. Now, what are the different ways that people start up and fund small businesses?
Well, the good news is there are quite a few. The majority of people who decide to become small business owners begin with themselves. So they pull from their savings, they max out on their credit cards, they try and do everything they can, you know, within their own personal sphere to make it happen. And, you know, we're no different here at Career Fuel. I mean, my husband and I have taken most of our savings at this point to make this company happen. Because it's well-timed. We're trying to help solve the jobs crisis, and it's the right thing to do right now. So that's the first place people turn. The second is what's called friends and family. So you turn to the people who know you the best and who are the most likely to say, oh, I believe in what you're trying to do, and I believe in that in large part because I believe in you. I have a history with you. I see that you're a hard worker, you're smart, you're honest, and that's the kind of person that I would like to invest in. so those are the two biggest. Then there are a number of things, avenues people can pursue outside of their own personal world. And those take in things like microfinancing.
Okay.
microfinancing is done by companies like Axion and Grameen and Kiva. And they enable the very small business, the person who wants to become a tailor, the person who wants to start a lawn mowing business, whatever it is, a jewelry business, maybe a cart business in a major city, to get a small loan that they then use to buy usually equipment that will enable them to perform a service that they can obtain money for.
Okay.
And it's, you know, we think of microfunding as most commonly with third world countries, because that's where a lot of it got started, but it's actually taking shape here in America and worth pursuing for the right kind of micro business.
Okay.
another way people fund their businesses is they get loans. This was more true before the recession began. It used to be that you could go to your local bank and apply for either a straight bank loan or a bank loan that was underwritten by the government in the form of an SBA loan. That is very hard since the recession, and it's also something that is, like the man this morning I interviewed, a small business owner.
Yep.
And he went for an SBA loan a number of years ago, and he said, look, you know, this is crazy. They want me to basically put up 100% collateral for my loan after I've already invested a ton of my own personal money in the business, and that's despite the fact that the government underwrites the loan by about 90%. So in the end, he decided not to go down that road. But there are numerous people, millions of people, who do get SBA loans and for whom it works.
Right.
Then there are things called strategic partners. Basically, if you think about your product or service and other companies that are complementary, so, you know, maybe let's suppose you've come up with a new idea for a better hamburger
okay.
than exists today. A natural strategic partner could be for you McDonald's or Burger King, because they go through a lot of hamburger meat.
Right.
So you want to think about, as I said, those complementary businesses that could be really strategic partners and who might be interested in investing in your business, because your success means their success. and then once you've kind of exhausted all of those avenues, then you move into the more formal world of capital raising, and now you're into what's called angel investing, and then ultimately venture capital fundraising.
Right.
Angel investing is basically, you know, people who have created some wealth for themselves, who've decided to take some of that money and kind of, you know, sprinkle it across a number of businesses. So usually if you're looking to raise in the neighborhood of, let's say, under $1 million, that's a good place for you to go. and then if you want to raise over $1 million, that's where you're in the venture capital world, and that's a whole sort of animal unto itself.
Right, exactly. Well, you know, I thought it was very interesting because you talked about that the SBA loans are the ones that are drying up, especially the story that you mentioned there about the person who needed to have 100% collateral for a loan that is 90% funded by, I mean, you know, backed up by the federal government. It's like, okay, so in other words, the collateral would have been like 190% if we look at it like that.
Exactly right.
And it's just like, okay, well, then what's the purpose of getting the loan?
Right. But even with that, interestingly, I mean, I went through this process myself.
Right.
And the bank said even with that, they would not give us a loan, because basically the SBA loans are largely given to companies that already exist.
Right.
And are looking to take it to the next level. So let's say you're a doctor. Let's say you're a dermatologist and you want to open up a spa as part of your business and perform facial treatments. That's the kind of customer that the banks and SBA loans go to, someone who has a proven revenue stream and therefore has just more credibility when it comes down to whether or not it's a good bank loan. A true startup has a really tough time of it these days getting an SBA loan. It's just not sort of the profile of what they invest in.
Wow, isn't that something? And I guess that's why, you know, maybe the crowdfunding legislation is very important. But I know that the American Jobs Act is one aspect of how crowdfunding has expanded. So why is the American Jobs Act important for new business creation in our country?
Well, it comes at a great time because, as you were saying before I came on the show, you know, Friday the economic numbers came out, the job numbers came out, and it was a real disappointment. The question that we had going into Friday was whether the March and April numbers were things that slowed, the economy, you know, the job numbers had stalled, was that an aberration, or was that an indication that things had changed, that the economy overall had slowed? And basically, that was the conclusion. We had, you know, very abysmal new job growth in the month of May, suggesting that this is not sort of a blip, but rather a change in the economy and not one that is good. And so the market tanked as a result, and there's all this worry about what it means, you know, longer term for our country. And, of course, many are focused on the election results as a result of it.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason the Jobs Act becomes so important is when you look at the numbers, right now we have 23 million people who are underemployed. They
right.
either lack a job or they don't have enough of a job. And we have 3.7 million jobs available. So you can right there see the disconnect. We have a lot more people looking for work than we have work. Mm-hmm. And that means that many of those people are going to end up having to become small business owners.
Right.
And, you know, small business has historically been the sort of engine that has cranked our economy. In fact, the Kauffman Foundation has a statistic that says that half of the companies in the 2009 list of Fortune 500 companies were launched during a recession or bear market. So, in other words, this can be an opportunity for many. This downturn, this terrible time for jobs, can be exactly the opportunity for, you know, Mary or Joe or Jean to create that next big Fortune 500 company.
Yeah.
And the Crowdfunding Act will help, because right now, crowdfunding is, I would say, the newest means available today for raising money. If you go to Kickstarter.com or HelpersUnite.com or Indigo, you will find there are, you know, thousands of companies or businesses that are raising money right now.
Mm-hmm.
But they cannot give you equity. You are making a donation to those companies. You are saying, wow, that's a neat idea, mostly because it's a film that sounds interesting or that the world needs to hear or see, or maybe somebody is raising money for a book. And more typically these days, you see little technology companies, you know, raising money to get their little techno watch or something like that off the ground.
Right, definitely.
And they ask you for money, just like our elected, our would-be politicians raise money. And you make a donation, and maybe they put your name in the credits if it's a film, or they offer to send you a watch if it's a watch they're building. But you never become a stockholder in the company.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where, well, that going forward with the Jobs Act, that will be different. When the Jobs Act, when the SEC figures out the regulations to enact the Jobs Act, and that's expected to be done by the end of this year,
right.
I, as a small business owner, will be able to go to the people, you know, in the general public and say, I am offering X percent of my company in exchange for your contribution.
Okay.
So you will become a stockholder in exchange for money that you give to the company. That doesn't exist today, and that has enormous upside potential. I mean, I, for instance, would love to be able to go to the American public and say, own a piece of how America works, because that is, I am teaching America with Career Fuel how to work.
Right.
How wonderful for them to have an opportunity to actually own it. And so this should open up a lot more capital fundraising, because now the little guy who never had access to the Apple computer or the Googles or the Amazons before they went public, can now potentially get in on the ground floor of those companies. And let me tell you, that's where the money is made.
That's true.
if you look at, for instance, in the case of Google, the earliest investors in Google were Kleiner Perkins and Sequoia Capital. Both of them are venture capital firms. And their initial investment in Google grew, each share that they obtained when they invested grew to $85. When the IPO, when the initial public offering occurred,
right,
it would be worth six. So they got basically 149% return on their purchase price for their stock holdings, compared to anyone who has purchased Google stock since it went public, and those people got a little over 6%.
Wow. I mean, when you're looking at a rate of 149%
return. For 6 times, yeah. So the money, most of the big money is made before a company ever becomes public and it ever becomes accessible to everyone, and particularly the little guy. Now that's going to change.
And see, I think that's so important because just say, you know, in your community or better yet, you know, maybe in your locality, you know, I'm saying a region or something of that nature, you know of a particular business owner that is doing something great. You know, they have this wonderful idea. They're trying to get it off the ground. One of the reasons what they can't get it off the ground is financing, especially in this economy. It's very difficult to attain financing. And you're willing to invest a certain amount of money inside of that business. But the question would be, obviously, you know, and I'm talking about these are, I'm not saying, you know, extremely wealthy folks. I'm talking about basically, you know, maybe again, Mary and Joe that, you know, are middle class or, you know, or just a little bit above that or even just a little bit below that. And they may have about, you know, $100 or $150 because they do believe in this idea because they know that it can work. And they want to invest it inside this company. But the question now is if you invest it there, obviously, there is no return for you for doing so. You can still invest it and invest it basically based on a donation. But in the same aspect, it would be nice to look forward to if this company actually does become successful, very successful, that, you know, you can be willing to make a small amount of money on that. And it brings the investment down to the ground level instead of where it is now, which is basically at, you know, I mean, honestly, the bigger companies get in, they take advantage of these things, which that's what they're supposed to do. But what about for the little guy? The little guy, go ahead.
Well,
I'm sorry.
And again, just to quantify that, going back to the Google example, the two venture capital firms, their original $25 million investment grew to what would be $28 billion today. If someone like you and I had invested $250 at the same time with the same terms, that investment today would be worth $278,000.
Wow, it's talking about...
Yeah, in just 6 years. Like, that's incredible.
Yeah.
Well, actually, it would be 10 years because it would have been pre-IPO. But the point is, it would be nice for everyone to be able to play in that world. But understand, most of these investments will not go anywhere. I mean, and that's the part that the SEC will be going to great lengths to explain to people who invest in these crowdfunding campaigns once they get launched. Because, you know, just like venture capitalists really cannot predict which of their investments are going to go the distance, you know, nor can we. You should only invest if you really think that you can afford to lose that money. But the idea is that you will ultimately invest in companies that you have some connection to, because I, as the company who would be crowdfunding, am only going to be able to basically advertise or communicate my offering to the people who are already in my social circle. So,
of course,
the SEC is going to require that basically I link up my Twitter and my LinkedIn and my Facebook and my email accounts, and those are the people that I can disseminate my crowdfunding campaign to, and they become my world of would-be investors, as do their friends who they tell about my opportunity.
Well, you know, Anne-Marie, the first thing I think about is, like, for instance, I know for a while I owned a janitorial company. And one of the things that I used to do, I was a part of the Chamber of Commerce, and then, you know, because the Chamber of Commerce is big, some of the members break off into smaller groups, like BNIs, or might as well say hyper-business networking groups, where you are in an organization, small, with about 10 or 12 other people. You're promoting their businesses. They're promoting yours, obviously, and you're looking for ways to, you know, grow your group members' businesses and vice versa. And one of the just imagine to me how a crowdfunding situation could work with that, because you're constantly meeting with these people on a weekly or biweekly basis, you know, trying to come up with ideas in order to, you know, cross promote not only your business but also theirs. And just think if you actually could invest real money and look for a return in that business.
Right.
That would be awesome.
Right.
Oh, I mean, wow. Wow. I can't say enough about it. I hope this definitely hurries up and gets passed, because I think this is basically where the economy needs to go right now, especially considering the banking institutions are being very tight with their capital. Now,
right.
How one question that I have, and I think we explained, you know, how the capital will be raised, but what things can entrepreneurs or aspiring small business owners can do right now to be ready for this provision in the Jobs Act that, you know, will be going forth?
Okay. Well, and let me just explain there. So the Jobs Act is law.
Yeah.
When it was signed into law in April, it was handed over to the SEC to basically figure out what the regulations should look like.
Okay.
And the SEC has until the end of this year to write those regulations.
All right.
It's possible it could be sooner, but frankly, this is such an enormous undertaking for them. We are expecting it will take until the end of the year. So that means that effectively January 2nd, people will be able to launch their own crowdfunding campaigns for their businesses.
Okay.
That may seem like a long way off, but, you know, there are a lot of things that you're going to need to do to be ready and you can be working on now. For instance, look at the campaigns that exist today. Remember, those campaigns, they cannot offer equity. They cannot offer stock. But look at the ones that are successful and see how they work. Study them, because there's a lot for you to learn that you can glean from their experience that will be helpful to you. How do they market themselves? How do they communicate to people on the site? Do they use visuals? What do those visuals look like? All that kind of stuff. The second thing is you're going to have a business plan in order that you're going to have to submit to whatever platform you choose. So get going writing that business plan, because that the basis for that business plan is going to be what you are going to be using to sell to people effectively to invest in your company. They're going to want to know, how big is the bread box? You know, what does the competition look like?
Right.
How, you know, what are the competitive environment factors? How is your pricing going to compare to everyone else? What's your long-term vision after you launch? All that kind of stuff. So use this time now to work through all of that strategic thinking and financial planning so that you are ready. You're ready on January 2nd
right.
with that information. The third thing is you should build out your social networks, because, as I mentioned, the government is really concerned about fraud. They are, and fraud is inevitable with any fundraising program.
Right.
So
okay.
They will limit your ability to communicate or to market yourself to your existing social networks. If you're not on Twitter, if you only have, you know, 5 connections on LinkedIn, if you really don't play on Facebook, or you don't really have a very deep email list, to be honest, it's going to be hard for you to be successful with a crowdfunding campaign, because those are the only people you're going to be able to communicate your crowdfunding effort to when you launch.
Okay.
So build them out now. You know, start reaching out to people and getting them interested in your idea without a lot of detail that could get you in trouble with the government.
Right, of course.
But build up your social networking presence so that you have a good sized audience that you can go to. In hopes, because this is all that kind of numbers game. I mean, let's suppose for a moment you have, you know, 1,000. Between all the social platforms, your email, your Twitter, your Facebook, your LinkedIn, your Pinterest, all the rest, let's suppose
right.
you have 2,000 people in your world. You're ultimately trying to get to, you know, 200,000, because you're trying to get those 2,000 people to get excited about you and tell the people in their worlds.
Exactly.
So the bigger the first number is, the bigger the potential is for sharing and therefore for fundraising. So that's the second thing that you can do. The third is, once you do your business plan, test drive it. Put it in front of some people, ideally the ones that you'll be, you know, communicating to, and get their feedback, because better you get it before you're live. All those questions that people pose to you once you have a live crowdfunding campaign, the answers that you provide will be public.
Yep.
So why not use the opportunity now to practice that and see what kind of questions are going to come up and see how good you are on answering them. Maybe you need also to consult with your securities attorney or your generalist attorney to make certain that you're not saying more than you need to say, or you're not saying things that are not appropriate to say. So, again, use that time for rehearsing, and all those things will put you in a much better position come January 2nd to be ready and more importantly, be successful. Because the other thing people need to know is that you will declare as part of your campaign, I am raising, let's say, $500,000. And you can only, by the way, raise up to $1 million.
Okay.
So let's say you're going to – so the max is $1 million. Let's say you've decided to raise $500,000, and you're going to give up 10% of your company for that. You say you want to do it in 30 days. At the end of 30 days, if you have only raised $499,000, you don't get any of it.
Oh, wow. Okay.
You only get to keep the money if your campaign was successful.
Okay.
So it will be really important for you to think through what is a reasonable amount for me to achieve.
Right.
Will people think that that's worth it given the amount of equity I'm giving up? And am I giving it enough time to be successful? Because that would be heartbreaking if you got that close. You have to turn all the money back to the people.
Yeah. Definitely. And that's why that business plan and you were speaking of is so critically important. And I know that maybe you have heard of groups with the Small Business Association. I want a SCORE. There it is, SCORE, that can help you write your business plan for free. These are retired executives. They basically are given their time, and they have SCORES in various communities. I know here in my local community, they have a SCORE chapter right at Cleary University, my alma mater. And also where I go to right now for my master's degree, that they have SCORE chapters in your local community. These executives will work with you in order to be able to write your business plan. So when it comes time for you to present it for a crowdfunding proposal, you will have a great business. They're not going to write it for you. They're going to guide you in order to write it.
SCORE is a great organization. Yeah. I would also say that all the things that we've discussed, the various ways to raise money, how to do a business plan, resources like SCORE that are available to help you that are free, all of that is on careerfuel.net in our Start a Business section.
Yeah. And you have some other great information also, Anne-Marie, on your site, including more if people are looking on a smaller scale in order to try and start a business. Like you said, maybe the lawn mowing business or something local in their community. I know you have sites that will allow you to actually get into crowdfunding on a smaller scale right now. And can you talk about those real quick?
Well, as I said, crowdfunding exists today. You can go to helplessunite.com. There's a new crowdfunding platform or company opening up practically every day now in anticipation of the Jobs Act or as a result of the Jobs Act. But a lot of people that are having success locally right now are, someone who's starting a restaurant in a community. Who are the natural people to be vested in the success of that restaurant? It's the people in the community who will frequent it. And so you see examples of people turning to their community to help raise money and in return are saying you'll always be guaranteed a table, you will get coupons for, let's say, 50% off your first meal and 20% off your second meal, things of that nature. Or, again, let's suppose you are raising money for something pertaining to your school or your church. Maybe you have an idea for a film that whose subject matter is very local in orientation. Again, you can go to these platforms and very quickly, within a day you can have a campaign up. And if you actively market it to your community, yes, you can walk away with, I think the average raise for these campaigns, all crowdfunding campaigns today, is about $20,000. So if you're looking to raise something in that neighborhood, it's doable today.
Wow, yeah. And I just want to briefly, before we get ready to wrap up our second half of the series, I want you to talk about, if you could, CareerFuel.net, and let people know why it's so important that they connect with your site.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for that marketing up.
No,
CareerFuel.net was created to help solve the jobs crisis. You know, why? Because my husband lost his job. I know exactly what this looks and feels like. We take the chaos out of finding the right information and the inspiration to get it done. We have done the work. We have gone out through the web. We have researched all the different companies and apps and websites to bring back to you on our site what you need to know to get a job, what you need to know to start a business, and the inspiration to do it. We blog every week about ways in which people used LinkedIn, ways in which they use Twitter, ways in which they use social networking to get jobs. We also do original videos on this. We do videos on people who got jobs. This coming week, for instance, we're launching a video about a young girl who was an accidental escapee out of Cuba at age 7.
Wow.
In the middle of the night. She's now in her mid-20s, and she works as a legislative aide in Congress. You know, if she can manage to survive on a raft out of Cuba and find her way to a job in Congress, anything is possible. And this
exactly.
is what people need to hear, never more than now. So we give you all the different – we give you the what you need to know, the creative ways to go about things, the inspiration to believe you can get it done, all in one place. And all for free, called CareerFuel.net.
Right, for free. You can't beat free.
Definitely. Right.
Free is good. Free is definitely good.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much. And just to let our listeners know, Anne-Marie will be coming back on Sunday, August 5th, and we'll be talking about looking forward to work together to get America's working and self-supporting, which I think is a great way to wrap up this series, because if you go back to our last series, the beginning of this, which is Sunday, May 6th, you can go back and listen on ROJS Radio Live here. It was using effective social media activities to find your next job opportunity. And what we're trying to do here is that we're trying to actually, within the course of these three series, really give people to come outside of the box and basically go beyond their horizons that maybe they have right now in order to look at different ways in order to try and find your next job opportunity. Because you're going to have to, honestly, Anne-Marie, I really do believe this, you're going to have to think outside of the box before
mm-hmm.
years to come. In order to try and be self-sustaining and also supporting your family. It's not just going to be the way it was where you can look forward to just getting a job maybe in your local community, because that job maybe is not going to pay enough or it's not going to provide enough money to take care of your personal needs. So you're going to have to look at an A plan and a B plan and a C plan in order to make it. So that's what we're trying to do with this series of Finding Your Passion in the 21st Century, is to give you that A, B, and C plan and get you started in the right direction. So thank you so much again for coming on to our program here, and we're looking forward to having you come back on August 5th at 11:15.
You bet.
Okay.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, sure.
Have
a great day. Yeah, bye-bye.